Time for us to return to the hotline now as we bring in Adam Burke with BangTheBook.com and Bang the Book Radio. Adam, always a pleasure, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing well, Andy. How you doing?
So far, so good. Boy, this should be a lot of fun this weekend. A lot of great things happening. World Series, at the very least, Game 3 tonight and Game 4 tomorrow. After that, we shall see. Would like to hope that we'll get at least a fifth game out of this series. And, of course, a full slate of college football matchups tomorrow, along with the Week 8 NFL slate a little bit later on Sunday. But, Adam, I want to begin with tonight's matchup. The LA Angels trying to get back into this series, down 2-0 in the Fall Classic. And you wrote a pretty interesting piece a little bit earlier today detailing betting picks and tips for this game. And you detailed something in there about Rick Porcello, who's getting the start for the Boston Red Sox tonight, talking about how imperative it will be for him to try and keep the ball down in the zone. And, boy, command, as you detail in this article, isn't necessarily something that he does consistently. But let's get into the importance of that, because the starting pitching, I thought, could have gone either way in this series. I picked the Dodgers in six, and, well, unless they pull off four straight wins, I'm going to be way off here. But let's get into this matchup tonight and the starting pitching matchup and how that could certainly affect these betting picks and tips for tonight's game.
I think Rick Porcello is a really interesting wild card here tonight, Andy, because, you know, this is a guy that really needs to live with the ground ball. And he improved his 2017 numbers here in 2018 because he induced about 5% more ground balls this season. But that hasn't carried over into the playoffs. A lot of fly balls in his start against Houston. In fact, 12 of the 16 balls that were put in play were hit into the air, either fly balls or line drives. That's not going to get it done for a guy like Rick Porcello, who doesn't have the best command, doesn't have premier velocity or anything like that. So, decent chance for the Dodgers here to do something with the sticks. The problem for the Dodgers in this spot is that they're very dependent on the walk, because, you know, from a batting average standpoint, they're a team that hits a lot of home runs, but they don't really get a lot of base hits for one reason or another. They draw a lot of walks, and then they hit the multi-run home runs. Porcello's not going to give up those walks. So if he stays down in the zone, Boston's in pretty good shape here tonight, at least in terms of their starting pitcher. But I love the guy on the other side, Walker Buehler. I'll have a play on him to win the Cy Young next year in the National League, probably the year after that as well if he doesn't do it in 2019. Phenomenal stuff, strikeout guy. I think he had about a 51% ground ball rate in the regular season. This is a guy that really does it all. He's gotten a little bit unlucky here in the postseason, where when he's had base runners, they've come around to score. Stranded a lot of guys in his Game 7 start against the Brewers that, you know, got the Dodgers to the World Series. So the pitching matchup tonight is very interesting. I think Walker Buehler has the higher upside, but obviously it's hard to bet against this Boston offense with what they've done here so far.
And to that point, I mean, just incredible what the Red Sox have been able to do in clutch situations. Dan Schulman tweeted this out earlier, sharing some information from the Red Sox media notes. With runners in scoring position this postseason, the Red Sox have a slash line of .363, .492, and .626. And with runners in scoring position and two down, the slash line gets even better at .415, .564, .756. That's a gigantic gut punch to the Dodgers, is it not?
No, it is. It's a huge one, and especially because the Dodgers here throughout the playoffs, even going back to their division series round against the Braves, have had a lot of issues in that spot. And, you know, it was one of the things coming into the playoffs that I kind of held against Boston a little bit. There's an alternate standings metric called base runs. Basically what it does is it takes away the context of every plate appearance, both offensively and while you're pitching. So if there's a runner on first or second, base runs doesn't worry about it. So it kind of tries to predict some of the teams that got a little bit lucky from a sequencing standpoint. Boston overachieved by 9 games in the regular season because they were so good offensively with runners in scoring position. In fact, the best offense in baseball. I figured that would regress a little bit. It hasn't done so here yet in the playoffs, which is kind of fascinating to me, because one of the big things about the playoffs is you always face above average to elite pitching. Doesn't matter what team you're playing, they're going to have good pitching. That's how they get to the playoffs. So for Boston to keep this up here, you know, going through the Yankees and Astros and now on into this series, very, very impressive. There's probably no rhyme or reason to it other than this is a very talented offense, and, you know, I wouldn't expect the same thing next year, though.
Well, I'll tell you what, 1 through 9, I don't know that you can find a better offense in baseball. What they're doing this year is certainly special. Again, Adam Burke with BangTheBook.com and Bang the Book Radio, our guest here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. Adam, I want to take a look at some college games, some Week 9 situational betting tips for a wide variety of different contests this weekend. We'll focus on a Big Ten matchup first. Michigan State taking on Purdue. Now, Sparty got smacked in the mouth last week at home against Michigan, and of course Purdue. You know, we're an Ohio State affiliate, so I know a lot of folks in this area have a pretty good understanding of what Purdue did last week. Well, what are your thoughts on the situational betting tips heading into a game like this where Michigan State is really hungry for a win after being embarrassed last week, and Purdue is coming off one of the biggest wins in the history of the program over the last 10 years?
This is a fascinating game, and I love this game. I'm going to be paying close attention to this game as well. I think the biggest thing that stood out to me about that Purdue win over Ohio State, Andy, is that Purdue was the faster team. And there is no reason for that to happen to Ohio State in Big Ten play. But it speaks to what Jeff Brohm is doing there. It speaks to what Nick Holt is doing there. And Mark D'Antonio has been a phenomenal coach at Michigan State for a very long time. But the thing is, Michigan State thrives in an underdog role. And this game is virtually a coin flip. Michigan State's a little bit of a favorite in this one. But I think this type of spot actually favors Purdue because you got that big win, and you don't want to be satisfied with one win. You're trying to build up the identity of this Boilermaker program. You've got to keep your foot on the gas. And I think Jeff Brohm is the kind of guy who can get that across to his team. Whereas Michigan State, they get the win over Penn State. That said more about Penn State, I think, than anything else. Last week, less than 100 yards of offense. When you get amped up for a game against Big Brother and you get knocked around the way that Michigan State did, I think there's a multiple-week hangover for something like that. So I do like Purdue a little bit in this spot, but obviously the letdown factor is certainly worth considering.
There are a couple of other college games we'd like to take a look at as well. The next one, I guess we're not necessarily allowed to refer to anymore as the world's largest outdoor cocktail party anymore, but still it's got a lot of allure to it. You know, Georgia taking on Florida. Dan Mullen is one of those guys that I've always enjoyed following. When I was at Bowling Green, he was the quarterback coach there. And Georgia, of course, coming off an appearance in the national championship game a season ago. What are the prospects of this game?
I think this is the most important game of the weekend for both of these teams because the winner of this game probably winds up getting a shot at Alabama in Atlanta for the SEC championship game. Now, they won't win that game. I think Clemson is the only team in Alabama's stratosphere right now. But this could decide the winner of the SEC East. And, you know, Dan Mullen is a guy, phenomenal head coach. I don't think he gets enough respect because he was at a place like Mississippi State. But now that he's at a premier college football program like Florida, you know, I think now, and this is probably the reason why he took that job after being an offensive coordinator there, you know, now he can put himself firmly on the map as one of college football's top 10 coaches. 15-7-1 against the spread in the last 23 games as an underdog. 9 of those spread wins are outright upset wins. So I think Florida's in a very good spot here. Both teams off a bye. Georgia's got some quarterback questions now with Jake Fromm benched for Justin Fields. I think Florida's the side in this game here. Love Florida's defense. And I think the biggest thing, even more so than situational spot, rivalry game, anything like that, Georgia getting beaten badly by LSU exposed what Georgia lost from last season. Nick Chubb, who we all know very well, Sony Michel, Roquan Smith, they lost some other guys as well. Last week was the first time, or 2 weeks ago, was the first time they played somebody that could expose them. This is the second time with the Florida Gators, and I think they do get it done in Jacksonville.
One last game that we'll take a look at here in the college football slate. Again, a big one on Saturday. A neutral site game. It's Notre Dame taking on Navy, but it's taking place in San Diego. And one of the things you mentioned about this game is that this isn't an ideal situation for either team. Why is that?
Well, I mean, it's tough for Notre Dame because you have to prepare for the triple option. And the triple option takes a lot of time to prepare for. Now, of course, Notre Dame sees it every year. But having to travel all the way out to San Diego, because this is a neutral site game, I'm sure there are media obligations or some other kind of fanfare associated with this game. It's not all about the football game for Notre Dame. And when you play the triple option, it's very important to be prepared. They haven't had a ton of great success with it in the past. But when you look at this game and Notre Dame's a 24-point favorite, anybody that knows anything about the triple option is fully aware that it is slow, it is methodical, and if you don't get off the field, you don't get a lot of possessions. So very hard for a team to win by more than 24 points in a game with a limited number of possessions. However, Navy's not very good this year. They've definitely taken a step back. And also, I think for the listeners out there that may be looking ahead a little bit, Navy plays Cincinnati next week. Luke Fickell's team is off to a phenomenal start. Then they play UCF, another great team, probably the best group of five team that's out there. So Navy, in a long-term fade situation here, I'll be looking to go against them next week in Cincinnati and then also the following week in Orlando.
All right, Adam, we'll turn our attention now to the NFL. Well, this week's England game, Philly taking on Jacksonville. You mentioned in your article earlier this week, talking about some of the early lines a few days ago, that Philly is a team you think a lot of people are going to jump on, but you also mentioned that Jacksonville is in a better situational spot here. Why is that?
Well, this will be the sixth time for the Jaguars playing over in London, and I mean, there's been talk in the past, and it doesn't look like it's going to happen, but there's been talk in the past of the Jaguars relocating to London because it's just been such a good thing for them. Of course, now that they've gotten better, the fan base in Jacksonville has kind of responded, but like I said, this is their sixth time going over there, Philadelphia going there for the first time. When the Jaguars play a team that's playing for the first time in London, they are 3-0 straight up. And teams that have only played one game in London are just 5-10-2 straight up. So for Philadelphia here, going over there, it's a very unique type of thing. And I also think, too, you know, Jacksonville kind of gets a little bit of a pass. They're kind of the, you know, beloved stepchild or something like that of London. So I think that their struggles won't be magnified as much by the local media, whereas you've got the reigning Super Bowl champions who are just 3-4 on the season. They're going to be in the spotlight. They're going to be questioned about it. I think Jacksonville kind of feels a little bit of a sense of home when they go to London, a little bit of familiarity. I think that does ultimately help them this week.
Hard to dispute that. I think that definitely helps them. If you're familiar with that situation, the time change, the travel, all that good stuff, those elements are all definitely at play. Adam, we'll cut you loose on this as we take a look at some lineup tips for DraftKings, FanDuel, other NFL DFS fantasy lineups for Week 8. Who do you like?
I think this is a pretty tough week in the NFL. I mean, last week we saw some teams that were offensively explosive that were on buys. This time we've got some of those teams back here. I think one guy you may want to take a look at, and he's probably picked up in a lot of traditional fantasy leagues, but Chris Carson seems to be the guy that has emerged in Seattle. The Seahawks are coming off of a bye. They're going out to Detroit. Detroit has the worst run defense in the league in terms of yards per carry allowed with 5.3. So I think Chris Carson's a guy that you want to take a look at. Then also from a running back standpoint, Jalen Richard for the Oakland Raiders. You know, now that Marshawn Lynch is on IR, they trade Amari Cooper away. Derek Carr doesn't have a whole lot of options there offensively at the skill positions. Richard already 31 catches on 37 targets. I think Carson and Richard are two running backs you want to keep an eye on this weekend.
Good stuff. Well, Adam, look, as always, we appreciate the time. Always a pleasure to catch up with you, and we will definitely do it again next week.
Sounds good, Andy. Thank you so much.